Thanks for tuning into this special WRVO and Campbell Institute Public Affairs program. I'm Grant Reher, host of the Campbell Conversations. I'm also the director of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University's Maxwell School, the sponsor of the debate you're about to hear on Proposition 1, the constitutional referendum on the ballot November 5th to expand casino gambling in the state. The Institute held this debate on October 16th. Two teams of two persons each debated whether the referendum should be passed, arguing that voters should vote yes on the referendum, were Ken Polkowski, Vice President of Government Affairs at the Business Council of New York, and Mark Baez, owner of Baez Associates and a member of Citizens for New York State Gaming Incorporated. Arguing against the referendum were Stephen Schaefer, Chair of the Coalition Against Gambling in New York, and David Blankenhorn, President of the Institute for American Values. In my introductory remarks delivered that evening, you'll hear more about the format of the debate, but the text of the referendum that will appear on your ballot on November 5th reads as follows. Authorizing casino gaming. The proposed amendment to Section 9 of Article 1 of the Constitution would allow the legislature to authorize up to 7 casinos in New York State for the legislated purposes of promoting job growth, increasing aid to schools, and permitting local governments to lower property taxes through revenues generated. Shall the amendment be approved? Well, shall it indeed? The debate follows. I want to welcome you to this Campbell Institute debate. I'm Grant Reher, the Institute's director. And I want to give a special welcome to those of you who are here from the community beyond the university, as well as the folks that are watching on our live stream, and in particular the Maxwell Alumni Network. Now, the question before you tonight is how we should vote on the state casino referendum. This will be a ballot proposition in the elections that are being held on November 5th. It is proposition number one. And it amends the Constitution to allow the legislature to authorize up to 7 casinos in New York State. This is a complicated issue involving different trade-offs. And as citizens, we are all, or at least as many of us who will go to the polls that day, going to have to render a decision on this. So this debate is not simply an academic exercise for all of us. And we're fortunate to have a great set of folks to debate this issue. They've donated their time here tonight, as well as their preparation time, in order to do this, and both Campbell and the Maxwell School are very grateful for that. I won't introduce them, as you have their short bios and the brochure that you received on the way in. I'll simply list them, and then you will actually meet them in just a minute. In favor of the proposition, we have, in the order in which they will speak, Ken Polkowski and Mark Baez. Against the proposition, we have Stephen Schaefer and David Blankenhorn. The proposition is that this assembly supports the casino referendum. I also want to thank Kelly Coleman, Bethany Wallowender, and Brooke Weinstein of the Campbell Institute, who have worked very hard to put this event together, and also the great students from the Public Affairs Program and an undergraduate intern who are helping out with it tonight. Now, let me very briefly go over the ground rules and the expectations, particularly for what you can do to help make this debate a success, because your participation is essential to it. And the more specific ground rules are contained in the brochure that you received when you entered. But first, please silence your smartphones if you haven't already done that. As I said, we have 4 panelists who are going to debate the proposition, and the speakers will alternate between each side, and they'll each have about 7 minutes to speak. And we begin with the affirmative. Then they'll have an opportunity working as teams to further rebut and question what the other side has said. After that, we will open it up to you. You'll be able to pose questions or make points directed to one or the other teams, or more generally. And once you are recognized, and I will call on you, and I'll try to call on 2 people at a time if I can, we have microphones that will be passed to you. And we ask for 2 things. First, that you wait for the microphone before you start speaking, as we want to have your comments be part of the archive program. And we're going to make that program available by the Maxwell School and the Campbell Institute, and also through WRVO Public Media. And second, that you're brief and to the point, and that you give the microphone back to the usher after you've stated your question or made your point. I'm sure that there are going to be quite a few of you that are going to want to speak or ask questions, and we have limited time for this. Then each team will have a very brief chance to make a closing argument, and after that, you're going to render your decision by walking out one of these two sets of doors, and I'll say more about that at the end of the debate. For now, just note that the affirmative door will be to your right, yay, and the negative door will be to your left, nay. Also, a heads up that in order to be counted at the end, you must stay until the completion of the debate. That seems only fair. In the reception that follows outside, you'll have a chance to meet the debaters and to continue the conversation. Now, just two last things I want to say. First, as some of you are no doubt aware, not only is the substance of this referendum controversial, the very language that has been used in the ballot proposition itself has also attracted controversy. Our main purpose in this debate, however, is to discuss the merits of the essential proposal, not whether it could have or should have been better described by the Board of Elections. Second, some of you are here, I hope, because you're wrestling with this question, you're trying to figure out how to vote, and that's fantastic. Others may be pretty sure what they think, and they're here to root on a side or for other reasons. That's fine, too. We just ask for mutual respect and civility throughout the event. So I think that about covers it. Please welcome the debaters now. Ken Bukowski, the floor is yours, at least for 7 minutes.
Thanks so much for the invite.
Oh, we got to go up there.
Yeah, we're going to have to stand.
I didn't get that part of the ground rules. Okay, good evening, everybody. I work for an organization that represents about 2,500 businesses across New York State, of which about a handful are casino and gaming interests. So I don't represent a gaming industry group. I represent businesses that are interested in economic development and investment job growth in New York State. Which brings us to this issue and to this debate today. I really have three major themes I wanted to share with you. The investment in casinos will bring economic benefits to the state, particularly upstate. And part of that is based on the capture of current gaming expenditures from New Yorkers that goes elsewhere. Second, this is an incremental increase in gaming. Gaming is here. It's been here for some time. It's an industry in New York State. It's an industry nationwide. And thirdly, this is an issue that has already been shown to have broad legislative and broad public support. I'm going to go in the reverse order. This is being made out as an extraordinary issue when it's really not. In part, I fear that because of the nature, some of the arguments on both sides are being elevated a bit. But it may be an extraordinary process, given that because of an anachronistic provision of the state constitution adopted in 1821 and amended three times since then, this is a constitutional issue rather than a statutory issue. It's really not what we typically think of when we think about constitutional issues, setting forth co-equal branches of government, setting forth bills of rights, etc. But state constitutions tend to be overly detailed and overly inclusive. If this was a statutory issue, which I would argue that it properly is, this debate would already be over. Casino gaming has already been approved with large bipartisan majorities in both houses of the state legislature. The amendment, the constitutional amendment, passed the Senate 55-8, the Assembly 110-30. This bill also has broad public support, particularly when it's put in the context, when it's being presented as having economic benefits and revenue benefits to the state. The percentage of surveyed persons who support it, it goes up. In the context, gaming is already a $142 billion industry in the U.S., 300,000 jobs. So that gaming is already present in New York State. We have 9 VLT centers, 5 full tribal casinos, 3 tribal bingo halls, almost 30,000 electronic gaming machines, 12 horse tracks. This proposal isn't bringing gambling to New York State. It's an incremental increase, and I would argue a modest incremental increase in that. And the biggest change is table games, not the electronic gaming, which seems to be one of the focuses of some of the opposition. I mentioned broad public support. Recent Siena polling shows that every demographic cohort in their crosstab supports expansion of casino gaming. Republicans and Democrat, upstate and downstate, male and female, all races, all ages. And again, the more this is put in context, the stronger the support is shown. When people were asked a generic question, do you support casino gaming? It was 46-46 in that polling. When it was put into the context of this will have economic impacts, et cetera, support was 55-42. Same poll said 75% of respondents agreed that this will bring jobs to New York State. 63% believed it will produce increased state and local tax revenues. I think those are pretty, I think those are very accurate. There's an estimate that somewhere between $1 billion and up to $3 billion is being spent by New Yorkers in casinos outside of New York State. In part, the economic impacts of this will be by diverting some of that revenue back into New York State. But there will be four new casinos built in upstate, most likely Catskills, Capital Region, Southern Tier. Depending on how they're developed, whether it's a greenfield development or expansion of existing facilities, yes, a reasonable estimate of 10,000 construction and permanent jobs, maybe $1.6 billion in construction. Based on what we've seen to date, these are jobs averaging in the $30,000 range. And importantly, the places where these things, I don't think gaming will be transformative. It's not the only thing that upstate economy needs, but it's something that will bring jobs to New York State and upstate New York and places that desperately need it. And I'll just give you a couple numbers. In Sullivan County, one of the places where location has been discussed, from 1990 to 2012, over a time where national job growth was about 22%, Sullivan County negative job growth, actually a loss of about 700 jobs. Tioga County in the Southern Tier, another location talked about as a logical location for an expanded casino. From 1990 to 2012, again, when national job growth up 22%, Tioga County down 2,500 jobs on a $25,000 job base. These are areas that need something. They need investment. They need jobs. Poverty is a significant public health concern as well. You need jobs in these areas whose job growth has been dormant. We're part of a broad business coalition that's supporting the constitutional amendment. It's business groups upstate and downstate. We have labor groups supporting us, including some of the construction trades, developers, local governments, teachers unions, and other. We think, again, the three key arguments on the positive side is there will be positive economic benefits. Second, that this is an incremental increase in gaming. Gaming is here. It's been here for many years. And third, this has shown broad legislative and broad public support to date. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Stephen Schaefer.
Thank you. And thank you to the school and the faculty of Syracuse University for putting on this debate tonight. Two key points about government-sanctioned gambling. Costs are much greater than benefits. Half the revenue is from out-of-control gamblers. These intertwine. The hidden socioeconomic costs of a new casino outweigh its benefits by at least 3-1. Just the quantifiable costs for the judiciary for gambling-related crimes or non-prosecuted thefts like underpaid personal loans, things like this drain from New York State society over $3 billion a year in carrying costs. This toll excludes suicide, divorce, psychological misery, as no one can give a dollar value to these. And it also excludes the proceeds of indictable crimes. Nearly all these costs flow from addicted gamblers or from more common but less severely affected problem gamblers. These two types, often lumped as problem gamblers, are about 4% of adults. The costs I mention, however, rope in not just these gamblers, but everyone close to them. About half the revenue to the average casino comes from problem gamblers who make up maybe 10% of past year casino users. Thus, nearly all the carrying costs of gambling in the United States
spring from the small fraction of gamblers who provide half a casino's revenue and thus half the revenue the casino will send to the government as tax. Much of the money lost by problem gamblers did not really belong to them, but to others who trusted them. That money, when it goes to the state treasury as tax, has come in large part from innocent non-gamblers. This is dirty money that government tries to launder by disbursing it as tax relief or aid to education. You'll also hear sometimes gambling is it's a tax on stupidity. Even those who think this characterization of problem gamblers is apt, and I don't, I think they have an illness. No, it doesn't fit their children, their parents, their spouses, their employers, their employees, their in-laws, their clients, their siblings, you name it. Problem gambling is epidemic in America. Epidemics must be controlled by preventing new cases, making current ones recover, and sustaining recovery. For a dire condition like problem gambling, the goal should be eradication. The Seventh Casino Amendment would do the reverse. Here's why. Casino promoters note correctly that when New York State residents go out of state to casinos, they dump here the socioeconomic costs of their illnesses while letting their losses be turned into profits to businesses in other states and revenue to government in other states. This recapture argument misses the point that the casinos meant to head off boundary crossers will, by being closer to home, create new casino users, some of whom will become problem gamblers and gambling addicts. By the way, this is the only place in the lineup of pro-casino arguments to acknowledge the socioeconomic costs of gambling as concrete, not just bleeding heart pathos. Predicting accurately how many new problem gamblers will emerge from seven yet unsighted casinos is hard. One clue: a national study by the New York State Research Institute on Addiction, found that the prevalence of problem gambling is doubled within 10 miles of one or more casinos. In November 2012, before the administration decided to delay on downstate casinos, I delivered to Albany, unasked, a worst-case scenario. Five casinos near New York City could create 82,000 new gambling addicts and 172,000 new problem gamblers. Casino promoters say they don't want to foster problem gamblers. These people, however, are the stuff of life to casinos, as to most types of gambling. Recall the central statistic: half the revenue from problem gamblers. A sound program to cut problem gambling to near zero would have casino revenue and also have the revenue to government. Can you picture a business really trying to rid itself of the 10% of customers who bring it 50% of its profits? Can you picture a government giving teeth to a regulatory agency which, if effective, would cut tax flow from that sector by 50%? Casino promoters declare they can reduce problem gambling, but they don't set objectives. Self-exclusion is hard to enforce. Money doled out by the state for treatment and prevention is not well used when, as is in the case in New York, only 1% of problem gamblers are in state-funded recovery programs. Winding up, I return to the hidden socioeconomic costs that make raising revenue by tax on casinos a loss for society. They make the cost to all of us for raising a dollar of revenue to government by taxing a new casino much higher than that of raising a dollar by upping a conventional tax rate. At a 31% tax on casinos, it would cost New York residents collectively at least $1.50 to send a dollar of casino tax to Albany. That 50% surcharge is a sort of tax concealed from most people and therefore tolerated. And don't forget, half that money is coming from problem gamblers who stripped it from somebody else. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Mark Moyer.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. My name is Mark Baez. I have several hats on tonight. I'm the CEO of the Partnership for Economic Development in Sullivan County, an economic development organization. I represent the Citizens for New York State Gaming, and I do have a private economic development firm, so I've been doing economic development for some 27 years now. And I'm here to talk to you about Sullivan County. It was mentioned tonight by the first speaker, and I'll give you a historical perspective of our county. Sullivan County was a tourism-based economy for many, many years. So names like the Concord, the Rally, the Brickman, Grossinger's, large hotels, massive resorts, 1,500 employees, 3,000 employees. They had dining rooms that served 1,500 people at one time. These were the industries that we thrived on in Sullivan County. We're in a unique position. Sullivan County does not have the infrastructure that you have here in Syracuse as far as a university, that you may have in the southern tier as far as Lynx, NASA, and some of the other NYSEG and some of the other employers there, or that you have in the capital region that has all the government offices that are there, Saratoga County, and now Global Foundries, which is doing tremendous good for that region. This is what we are, and you've heard tonight that we haven't had job growth in about 30 years. There's been a lack of alternative industry opportunities en masse. We've worked hard. We've introduced new industry alternatives to Sullivan County. We have some distribution and some light manufacturing, and we have some food processing. Our number one employer is in healthcare, 1,500 employees. You'll hear tonight, and you've heard tonight, about problem gambling and a breakdown of our societal values and how this is just a short-term fix and not a prudent economic policy. Well, I'm here to tell you that gambling already exists on virtually every street corner. You go into a convenience store, what do you see? Scratch-off games galore. You can get online and play video poker on your smartphone. You can do that right now. So the thought that these seven casinos, or four initially, will exacerbate that problem in such a way that it's going to cause Armageddon to our society is just simply not true. Sullivan County features a couple of things. High taxes, infiltration of social deterioration, gangs, drugs, a whole host of health-related disorders, high infant mortality rates, adult-onset diabetes, drug and alcohol addictions, and other health-related factors linked directly back to the lack of job opportunities. So is it not socially sound to provide an area that exhibits extraordinary underemployment, the opportunity for its citizens to earn an honest day's pay for an honest day's work? Would it not benefit of us all to provide opportunities for upward mobility to the citizenry of proposed project areas? Our primary project will introduce 1,000 jobs in phase one to Sullivan County. The project will introduce destination resort, casino, banquet event center, restaurants, parking facilities, a golf phase, an entertainment village phase, and the overall impact in Sullivan County alone from one project will be $395 million annually. So what does 1,000 jobs mean to Sullivan County? Well, we have about 30,000 people working in Sullivan County, an employment rate of about 7.9%. So 1,000 jobs is going to completely change our landscape overnight. And the total build-out and the total job numbers for that this one project in Sullivan County is going to be 2,600 people. So you can imagine, and we have had long discussions about whether we're going to get one or two, we think we're in the front running of getting two of them to bring back this wonderful industry, this tourism industry that we so desire in Sullivan County. I stand before you tonight, the son of an immigrant family who came here in 1958 and worked at those hotel casinos. And they may not have had the best jobs in the world. They washed dishes. My parents worked in the kitchen. My mom was a waitress for a time. And they brought in, they raised six kids in this community. And it's amazing that that industry and the jobs that they have that are considered so menial in some respects. I'm sitting here talking in front of you in this wonderful university, in this wonderful setting. I think that speaks loudly to what this project can do for us in Sullivan County, not only here, but in the state of New York. And I would say that in terms of fiscal stewardship, in terms of thriftness, in terms of watching our pocketbooks, I think the state has it right. I think that the fact that we can take those dollars that are going to New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and other surrounding states and other states across the country and keep them here in New York is the least we can do to help our schools, to help lower our tax base, and to help invigorate our economy. Thank you.
Thank you. David Blackenhorn.
Thank you. Well, both of my friends here have said that these casinos are good for the economy, but they haven't cited a single study that shows that they're good for the economy. They haven't said a single piece of research. And the reason is there is no such research. There's no such research. The independent economists who've looked at this over the years have concluded that casinos do not contribute to economic growth and in many cases actually slow down economic growth. The most important book on this subject is the book I'm holding in my hand. It's called Gambling in America, Costs and Benefits by Professor Earl Grenells, a very prominent economist. And he studies many, looks up many studies and summarizes them and does his own. A more recent study, Why Casinos Matter, I was associated with it along with 31 other scholars, and we reviewed all the economic evidence. The main reason casinos don't contribute to economic growth is they don't produce anything. If you bring a tire shop into your community that makes tires, if you may bring a donut shop into your wonderful town, it's going to make donuts. The only thing that happens in a casino is people lose their money. That's the only thing that gets made. Nothing of value gets made. Casinos do not help the economy. Now, you've heard some statistics. $1 billion, 30,000 jobs, 1,000 jobs in one county alone, $395 million annually. I'm suggesting that those numbers are kind of like political campaign promises. Oh, give us what we want, and then all these wonderful things will happen. The sun will shine brighter. Everything will be rosy. Show me the studies, fellas. Show me the studies. Just show me an independent study that doesn't come from the gambling industry itself that says any of this. And I'd like to see it as a scholar. I'd love to see real evidence on this. The real evidence is guys like this who do real studies. For example, you say that all the things will happen, but you don't talk about what economists call substitution effects. If a casino comes in and gives cheap buffets to people who go gamble in the casino, that means that that has downward harms other local businesses in the communities. So it's called the substitution effect. And I would be willing to bet you $100 of free slot play that none of these numbers that you've cited tonight take into account the whole concept of substitution effect. And if I'm wrong, please tell us what these studies are that talk about $1 billion and 30,000. And the governor said this in his speech he said $1 billion will happen. You know where that billion-dollar number came from? It came from the casino lobby. We're supposed to believe that the people who want the economic privilege are going to be independent, tell us some made-up number about the – no. Trust but verify. When you hear something like this, ask the person where they got this information, because the actual people who do analysis will tell you the casinos don't make anything. Casinos just take people's money. 70% of a floor space in casino. You know what? Have you been at these things? Slot machines. That's what they are. Slot machines, slot machines, slot machines. 80% of the revenue comes from slot machines. A slot machine is just a machine that you put your money in and it doesn't come back out. It's been programmed to take your money. That's what happens in a casino. So this thing about, it grows the economy. The flowers bloom. No, no, no. One thing happens at a casino. People go in there, put their money in machines, and lose it. What happens to it then? If Governor Cuomo and the politicians get their way, there will be a tax on that activity, and some of it will go to the state. That really will happen. Is this a good way to raise our money in New York? Taking advantage of vulnerable people, 50% of whom have problem gamblers messing up their lives and other people's lives by excessive gambling? Do we want to tax them? You know who plays slot machines? Disproportionately, lower-wage workers, retirees, women, and minorities. So these are the people who we're going to really stick it to get money for the state. I'm ashamed of the whole idea. Where's the timer? Am I out of time? How am I doing? I'm good. But I'm just getting warmed up here. Gaming is here to stay. Both of my friends said this. Of all the arguments they make, I find this the most personally upsetting. Tell me a problem in New York that we need more of on the grounds that it's already here. Right? Some people smoke a lot of cigarettes. Do we need more heavy cigarette smokers in New York on the grounds that some people already do it? We have a lot of problem gamblers in New York who mess up their lives and mess up other people's lives. Do we need more of them on the grounds that we already have some of them? Explain this logic to me. Tell me one negative thing that the government does today that they need to expand on the grounds that what? Oh, we already have it. There's an ethical question involved here. It's, do we want to put the government in the business of hurting some people so that the government can get some money? That's really what this comes down to. You want to set up these entities, bring in thousands and thousands of more of these slot machines, spread them in around in some casinos, so that vulnerable people, a lot of vulnerable people and other people, are going to go in there and lose their money so that the government can get a tax. It's not going to help the economy. Not a single study shows that it helps the economy. It helps government get money. That's the question. Do you think this is a good way to raise our revenue to pay for our services in the state of New York?
Thank you. So now the affirmative team will have 10 minutes for rebuttal, and that'll be followed by a 10-minute period for the negative. So the floor is yours, gentlemen.
So you heard it, Armageddon. The sky is falling, the world is falling apart. Yeah. And you see people that have gone to Mohegan Sun and to some of the other facilities, and you know, when you go there, I don't see the world falling apart. There's no doom and gloom from what I can tell. And he wanted a study. So I have a study here from the Cambridge Health Alliance Division on Addiction, Harvard Medical School teaching affiliate. And in this study, the findings are pretty interesting. They did a study, and this was based on the expansion of casinos in New England, a benchmark study for monitoring exposure to new gaming. And here's what we find. Of those surveyed, 90% of those surveyed studied played the lottery, less than half reported played the local lottery, less than half reported gambling in the last 12 months. 90% play the local lottery weekly. Of those who gambled in a casino, most averaged between $1 and $100 and reported average losses of $50. So it is evident that they had a cap that they would not exceed. That's most of us. So you have 4% of the people that may have a gambling problem, and that's a bad thing, and we should certainly pay attention to that. And we have, locally at least, dedicated resources to do that. The other day I had a debate, and part of the panel was a person from Gambling Anonymous. And he was an intelligent individual, and he said, we're not pro, or we're not against casino gaming. What he said is, we want to make sure that everyone's aware of this problem, and so we want to make sure that you're going to dedicate resources to help us with this issue and bring it more to light than it is today. Fair enough. I agree with that. Using the Alcohol Use Disorder and Associated Abilities Interview Schedule, an American Psychiatric Association criteria metric pertaining to the statistical model of mental disorders, of those surveyed, 0.2% triggered one metric to be considered a problem gambler. The data schedule requires 5 specific criteria to be an identifier of problem gambling. So only one metric, 0.2%. Nationwide, it was 0.4%. 92% gambled in their lifetime. 57% gambled during the last year. 0.4% qualified for one criteria, 0.2% for one criteria as a problem gambler in the last year. In economic development, when we look at a project that we want to bring into a certain area, we use statistical modeling. We use one that's called the RIMS model. And in layman's terms, what we do is we take an input and output analysis to determine the impact of that project in the area. The problem with the studies that have been done is they focus on the gambling and they focus on the tax collected. They don't focus on the pipe fitter that worked there and the money he earns or she earns. They don't focus on the plumber, the electrician, and those ancillary services that are provided by outside groups, outside vendors that happen to work on this massive project. And so those economic impacts are all figured into the numbers that are given to you by the state. They're not just pulling a number out of the sky and say, well, we think it's $1 billion, and they don't take the gaming association's number. Do you think politically that the governor and his administration would just take an arbitrary number out of the sky and say, well, here's the number? Of course not. There's a model. There's a statistical way of doing it. They do cost-benefit analysis to see if those projects would work in specific areas. So there is a systematic approach to where they designate that data. And I can tell you, on every project that we look to submit to the state for approvals, it's a very conservative formula. We use it for all our models. And so that, I think, is the way you should understand how these numbers have come about. And I'll end it, my portion, by saying this. The ancillary benefits, the ancillary, the entertainment venue, the golfing venue, the restaurants, the shows, the other things, the other activities, most of the people that we know go to casinos to enjoy some of these other activities. And the casino portion, while critical, is just part of a menu of a bunch of activities that people like to partake in when they go on vacation and they visit other areas. To simply say that all people do is go to a casino, hide themselves in a boiler room, and sit in a slot machine all day long, all the time, is just simply not true. And you're getting presented a version, an opinion, about how this actually takes place. And in reality, we all know that that's simply not true. Thank you.
Well, Mark did a great job on the rebuttal. Just a couple of points I'd like to add. I think it's a strange comment to say someone who doesn't make anything isn't part of the economy in a national world economy that's now about 40% intangible goods, where 50 years ago it was almost 100% tangible goods. Most of a large percentage of what we buy are electrons. We buy entertainment, we buy information. And that's where the gambling experience goes. I know some of the opponents to, what are we doing time-wise? Just curious. Oh, 5 minutes, beautiful. The idea that all gambling is predatory gambling, and gambling can never be entertainment. I think that's absolutely wrong, that I know. I live in Saratoga Springs, New York. I've been there 15 years. I can. You want studies or studies, but you want evidence. You have a gaming venue there, 600 jobs, $18 million payroll, which by my math is about $30,000 jobs on average. They're doing an expansion for a hotel. Gaming is very compatible with a strong economy. If you look back historically, gaming was the seed around which the economy in Nevada grew in over the last 20 years, one of the fastest growing state economy and state populations in America. There is economic development related to gaming. I'm the first one to say this is not the end all be all. It's a thing, not the thing. In places, though, where the resort gaming operations are being considered, it's more than gaming. It's hotels, it's food, it's entertainment. These are real jobs, real paychecks that will benefit real families. I think there's ample evidence to show that gaming and economic growth are wholly compatible. Thank you.
Now we have 10-minute rebuttal period by the negative.
I want to talk a little bit about the recapture strategy. Again, it goes back to the idea that people from New York are leaving the state to go and gamble somewhere else, leaving all the costs behind that are, in effect, charged to society, and then in the other state dropping their wad for the state to make a revenue or the businesses to make a profit. And I guess, theoretically, if I can understand the recapture argument, if it were possible to do it with some kind of very sensitive filter that grabbed only the boundary crossers and never caused a new gambling addict or a new problem gambler to be created in New York State by one of those Maginot Line casinos that's going to be set up to recapture people. The more people you stop on the way, because it's closer than the outside state, the more people are going to become problem gamblers and addicts. To me, this is a story of a state that is beleaguered, like all states, like Canada, all the Canadian provinces. Everywhere you look in the United States, gambling is endemic and epidemic, and problem gambling is the same way. But that is not a reason to set about doing something on this, which is a devastating national problem of about half the size of illegal drug abuse in billions of dollars per year. It's a huge, huge economic problem, and that's just the money. We're not talking about the ruined lives. So we have to do something about turning a tide, and a way to begin to recover for our society is not to add some more, not to do more of it. So I really think that we have to focus on addiction. Now, Ken brought up some figures that I find, I'd like to see them afterwards, in which he says, am I right, Ken, that the prevalence of problem gambling is 0.2%? I'm sorry, Mark, in the study you had.
The study that we did was a study on the New England expansion model, and they surveyed New England residents, to be clear.
But that just doesn't square with the basic prevalence statistic that's been out since 1998, and it comes from the same group of researchers that Mark quoted from the Cambridge Center on Addictions. And that says prevalence of gambling addiction in the United States at that time in adults was about 1.14%, and prevalence of problem gambling about 2.8%. Later studies by the same group suggested that the addiction prevalence could be as high as 1.4%. So whether people make a big point, only 1% of gamblers are in real trouble, but that 1% is millions of people when you have a population of, say, 200 million adults. So I'm not going to talk about more about addiction statistics, but I really want to say that it is the creating of addicts that worries me greatly. And for every job, and this state needs good jobs, and there are good jobs to be had in Sullivan County. I wish we could have an industry that had everything else, the golf courses, the water parks, all these other things, without feeling it needed to be a destination gaming resort, as it's known. And we need to understand that if we create 1,000 jobs, or 2,000, or 10,000, or 30,000 by proliferating enough casinos, we are also going to be creating probably that many addicts even, plus many more addicts and problem gamblers. In the state of Pennsylvania, it was a study showed that 8,000 jobs had been created by a recent spate of casinos. In the state of Pennsylvania, 10,000 people have applied for self-exclusion from the Pennsylvania casinos. That's only a portion of the most affected gamblers. So you have more people self-excluding than you have jobs supposedly created by the casino industry in Pennsylvania. That's a sorry state. Thank you.
Well, you know, again, my friend said that, oh, it's compatible with economic growth and it's wonderful for the economy. They haven't cited a single study because there is no study. There's no study. I'm sorry. There's no study that says casino gambling helps the economy. Anytime any activity happens, if you build a building, somebody's going to have a job to get the building, build the buildings. But what economists look at, what scholars look at is, does the activity contribute to economic growth? And the answer is casinos don't. Now, in a political season, when people want to say things, they go, oh, a billion, a trillion. I'm sorry. I want you guys, Show me a study. I will take just one study that shows that casinos contribute to economic growth. There isn't one. One of my friends said, oh, they don't just take these numbers out of the sky. I'm sorry. That's exactly where it came from. The $1 billion number that Governor Cuomo said, it's a made-up number. He stood there and said, this will contribute $1 billion to the economy of New York. Do you know where that number came from? It came from the New York Gaming Committee. It came from the casinos that wanted the privilege. So the guy that heads up the association said to a reporter, in Albany, he said, oh, we think this will be $1 billion for the economy of New York if we can just get these casinos for my members. And the governor said that in the speech. That's where the number came from. It literally got pulled out of the air. There was no cost. Just a guy, he just said it. There's no studies that show it helps the economy. People want to do this. The politicians want to do this for one reason only, to get the tax money. Okay? That's why they want to do it. Now, Stephen has said that the studies vary between, he said about half, a minimum of 35 to 55% of the money that gets spent in casinos on gambling comes from people that are really in trouble. They're a small group numerically, but they provide a large fraction of the money that goes to these casinos. And having a casino near you increases the likelihood that you or your child or your neighbor or somebody you know is going to be involved in this and get drawn up into this problem. So again, if it's not true, fellas, that 35 to 55% of the money comes from people that have serious problems, show me the evidence. Tell me what you have of a factual nature that is different from this. 35 to 55% comes from problem gamblers. Putting a casino in a community increases the number of problem gamblers in that community, according to all the studies. If you have evidence of another nature other than anecdotal, please share it with us. Last point is, they said, oh, it's golf and shows and vacations and skiing. The Constitution doesn't prohibit any of those things right now. So the people that do economic development they're free to make golf courses and convention centers and wonderful places for tourists to go. They're free to do all of that right now. And God bless them. I hope they do it, and I hope lots of people get good jobs doing it. There's only one thing that our Bill of Rights and our Constitution prohibits them from doing. They cannot allow commercial entities to come in and set up rigged games of chances that take advantage of people. They can't do that. Convention centers, skiing, golfing, wonderful restaurants, it's all wonderful. Do it. Just don't do this one thing that puts the state in the business of hurting people and hurting communities.
Thank you. And thanks to the four of you for your comments and your rebuttal. Now we're going to move to the audience question and answer period. So again, I imagine that there have been things that you have heard that have stimulated some thoughts or questions in your minds, and this is the time for you to raise your hand and share them. Gentlemen there, go ahead.
All right. So, glad to be here tonight. Very fine debate. And my question is directed towards Mr. Polkowski. All right. So I'd like to make a comment and then ask a question. So the comment is, you started out by saying that there's broad, that gambling is here already, and that both Democrats and Republicans are generally supportive of gambling. It seems to me that that's a bandwagon fallacy in the sense that just because everybody says it's right does not necessarily make something right. So I'd just like to put that forward. And the question I'd like to ask is, as far as what has not been adequately answered is this notion that, true, you know, restaurants provide a service, banquet facilities provide service, but when there's a factory, cars are produced. When an industry comes in, something is given back to society. But how do you answer this idea that essentially when you look at what gambling does, it produces nothing? It produces nothing except an avenue for people to come and spend their money and lose it, which, by the way, they don't have. So, I mean, I appreciate your concern for something that will drum up economy, but do you really believe in your heart that this will actually contribute towards creating bounty and plenty? And how do you address the situation that it does not really give anything back to society?
I'm not sure I remember the first part of the question, but I've read a bit on the issue of problem gambling since I started working on this issue, and there are, I don't know that there's data, there's surveys, there's estimates, but there are, I think, divergent estimates of what problem gambling is. And the only argument I've really heard in response to this on the other side is it's going to guaranteed increase, significant increase in problem gambling. That's the only downside I hear. This is a legal change that allows private entities to invest private dollars in construction, hiring people. These are activities that Saratoga Gaming, 600 jobs. That's a real number. It's 600 additional jobs. It's 600 paychecks. Has multiplier effects in the economy. That is an economic benefit. And I guess in general, I would say I haven't looked for studies on the economic benefit of gaming because there's data. There's data that shows you, what the jobs are. What the wages are. Remind me what the other part of his question was. There's a multiple parts there.
I think that's the basis of the question.
The last thing I was going to get at is it does give people something. I mean, I will say a casual gamer, gambler. I go to, we have a flat track, very popular. It's a source of entertainment instead of the money I would spend. And it's awful easy for a family of four to spend a couple hundred dollars on a dinner night out that you spend at Saratoga Racetrack instead. It is a source of entertainment that is an intangible benefit that I'm willing to pay my money for. And people on the other end of that transaction get jobs from it, get a paycheck from it. There's activity, economic activity goes along with it. So this idea, I think this notion that without a tangible good, unless someone's making tires in your neighborhood, economic activity doesn't exist. It's just not consistent with the way the economy works today.
And I would say that a website doesn't really create anything. It's a website. Facebook is making a ton of money right now, in the billions. They really don't create anything. They create an opportunity for you to communicate with others.
But it still
doesn't create a product or a tangible good. Now,
some would say another source of addiction.
Another source of addiction. And so the casinos, they have to be maintained.
A website that helps people communicate.
Right? The casinos have to be maintained. Now, we keep thinking about this casino, and I'm talking about a resort, a Mohegan Sun. This is a $600 million project. There's no casino that I know that just the casino portion costs $600 million. It's insane to think that. And so the maintenance facility, the HVAC people, the plumbers, the last plumber I hired to work in my house charged me $110 an hour. Are you kidding me? That's good money in Sullivan County. So they are making something. They are providing a service. There's a whole host of legal services and other professional services that are going to take advantage of this situation as well. And so to say that they're not going to do anything but take people's money and throw it away is just simply not true.
I want to move on to the next question now. There's a gentleman there with his hand up, and then, man, we'll get you next. Yeah.
Economic development? You got to be kidding. Las Vegas, beautiful. Sullivan County, my favorite town there. Liberty, New York.
That's where I live.
Love that place. I went down there, and they had one of the old places where the where they used to have comedy and things years ago.
Grossinger's.
Yes, is now a place, well, it's not Grossinger itself, but one of the places like that is a place where you can have a condominium or something. I went down there years ago to look at it. Wish I had gotten it a long time ago. It was built on the premise of this casino coming back then. I hit my heart and I never got it. But every place they have, any casino, gambling, the places are beautiful. Oneida, that strip going down through Oneida, every place where you've got it, it's just plain beautiful. And not only that, but it makes people just feel good knowing that they might have a chance, a shot at some money. It can help them out. And as far as a possessive, compulsive gambling goes, you could do it like you do when people go to the bars drinking. You only allow them so much, and then you say, you've had enough. Maybe they could have it so that you'd have to be able to prove that you can only go just, you can afford to go just so far with your gambling. Like, for example, I might go in with $100 at Turning Stone. If I win, I'm only going to play just that $100.
There seems to be a question there, and because we need to move on and get other questions. There's a question here about limiting the ability of a casino to limit the gambler from losing past a certain amount. I think there's a question there that the four of you can engage briefly.
Sure. The concept of one way to prevent problem gambling is put up placards giving the 1-800-HOPE-NY number. And if you see somebody who has got a gun to his head in the casino, you advise, well, I'm being a little facetious, but in fact, the casinos say that they cannot identify problem gamblers because the person who's spending a lot of money tonight might have just come into a big inheritance. It might be somebody that has never been in their casino before. If it's an habitué, they still say, well, maybe until he died and he's got some more money. They will not confront people who look like problem gamblers based on the patterns. Now, a recent study that actually came out from a member of the same group at Cambridge Center on Addictions showed that following player cards at a casino can actually identify who's in trouble. But the casinos are darn well not going to make those data available. So it is virtually impossible to get their cooperation in limiting play.
So go ahead and respond.
I'll answer your question. It exists today already in Missouri. They have a cap of $200 for the slot machines. And when you reach 200 and you actually have a card when you go in and they understand what you're spending, when you reach that cap of $200, they pull you aside and they maximize it on that cap. So there's ways to do that, and that's something that we can address, you know, as we decide where they're going to go. And there's other issues in terms of resources to address gambling problems.
I agree with both sides.
Right.
The way I see it, with a right wing and a left wing, but on a bird, you need both wings for that bird to
come apart. Let me get the next question here. On that note.
Aside from the values issue and the question of problem gamblers or not, I'd like to go back to the economic development question and address either Mr. Baez or Mr. Pukalski, in terms of how this is anything other than a zero-sum game. If you have a certain number of people who are going to gamble and you build a casino one place or another, they just seem to move from one to the other, and then they ultimately become white elephants the way Grossinger's and the Concord have.
Well, Grossinger's and the Concord became white elephants because at the time when the casino issue was large and Las Vegas was building and rebuilding and rebuilding itself three or four times over, we couldn't do it because of that quirk in the law. So the tourism industry in Sullivan County for decades said, hey, we really need these casinos to continue to get people here. So it's not a zero-sum game if, let's say that the $1 billion isn't there and they didn't do this. Let's say it's $200 million. Well, if $200 million is leaving your state and going to another state, that's a negative-sum game. And if we can keep that here, we consider that to be a positive game.
Neighbors also are part of our community,
So if you go from Connecticut to New Jersey to Pennsylvania, it just moves around.
I understand that. But these resort destinations bring money from outside of only our states as well, from international people, from events that are held at some of these casinos. So it's not just one particular area that's getting all of this money. And now I would say we want to keep our New York dollars, don't we? I mean, we really want to keep our New York dollars to help ourselves. And the leakage and the hemorrhaging that's going to these other states is something that we have to prevent and we have to stop. I mean, we really have to stop that. It's a real serious problem.
I mean, part of the challenge of any state economic development policy is how you get your share of the pie. And the argument is you always want to have a slightly larger share of the pie than you had. Right. I mean, we get who really cares if there are jobs for people in Sullivan County? All the people who live there, people that depend on the government services provided by local revenues, it is important. So there may be some, there's always, you know, jurisdictional competition for economic growth.
We've got a question down here.
I have two comments. I'm troubled, even if you take the low end, that 35% of the profits come from problem gamblers. I'm really troubled with an economic development model that takes its profits from the most vulnerable. And the other thing that was, I forget who said it, in Pennsylvania, self-excluders. I'm assuming that's people who somehow make themselves unable to go into the casino because of a problem. That there are more of those than jobs created, and those are the people who are willing to actually be able to get to a place to self-exclude. Those are the two things that I'm most troubled by.
Are you directing that to either side or the group in general?
Another very recent study, and again, I would just, with all respect, point out that it does matter to back up your statements with some analysis, some actual facts that are based in independent research. You guys have not done that. There's an independent study coming out of the University of Mississippi where they have 30 casinos. They estimated that the costs associated with the casinos, with the problems related to excessive gambling, crime, indebtedness, and so on, the cost of the problems that were generated significantly outweighed numerically, the dollars of problem dollars outweighed the dollars flowing to the state in revenue. This is a state, Mississippi, that's had casinos since 1990. They have 30 down there. They're very good at running casinos, and it's a net loss for society. Politicians like it because they're just looking at the revenue flow to the government, but the society suffers. And again, if somebody could explain to me what's the other point of view, I'd like to hear it, because there isn't another point of view. You guys say multiplier effects. That's a joke among economists. You have to look at both sides of an equation. You don't just say, oh, the plumber got paid some money. You have to look at the net effect on the economy. That's what's called independent research, and it all shows that this slows down economic growth.
Absolutely, absolutely untrue. We absolutely look at the ancillary effects of providing opportunities for people to work there, and we do look at the net effect, and we do have formulas that we use. It's called RIMS-2. It's the standard formula we use across the country, and we do input and output models that tell us these figures.
Now let me ask you,
studies after studies after studies. Anybody can do a study based on whatever assumptions when you have an ideology going into doing that study already. So let me ask you this question. Should we close down Budweiser? Should we close down the Napa Valley because we have a prevalent problem in alcohol in our country? I think not. When you go down to Tennessee, and Jack Daniel's is a factory there and does all of their liquor there. It's whiskey. It's hard whiskey. It's a dry town, and they're making whiskey in that town because they realize that if they close that factory, the negative impacts of that factory going down far outweigh any of the other socioeconomic impacts that are associated with problem drinking in that area.
There's another idea.
So you can go across the board and look at any other issue that has socioeconomic dynamics in a negative way, and the positives on this issue, on whether it's alcohol and other firms that make other sorts of things, far outweigh in terms of giving people a job and opportunities for growth and upward mobility than this particular issue. He mentioned it tonight. 1%, 2% of the people that gamble have problem gamblers identified by whatever metric you. Are you kidding me? 2%. compared to 98% of the people that are like Ken, who walk in, have a little form of entertainment, and then go back to their families and do what they have to do. Who are we to determine the social behavior of other people? Who am I to say to you, don't spend your money in a gambling parlor, don't buy cigarettes, don't buy alcohol, don't buy that new car, don't do whatever it is that I don't like? That's what we're talking about here. If you want to go and spend money in the casino and that entertains you for that period of time, God bless you. If you're happy about it, good for you.
Let me get a quick, Mr. Shaver, you wanted to say something quick. We'll get a quick response there, and then we'll move on to the next set of questions. So go ahead, sir.
I'm overwhelmed. the first point, we're not saying to Mark that all bad things should be banned in the United States. We're talking about the role of government in promoting the exploitation of people to generate revenues to itself. And along the way, maybe it says, oh, we'll create jobs. And jobs are created, no doubt about it. There may be substitution. Whether net jobs are created, I can't tell you. But new lines are filled, new people are hired. But if for every job an addict or a problem gambler is created, that's a major problem. The other thing, I don't really like the libertarian argument that we who oppose gambling expansion are trying to tell other people how to run their lives. This is about government sponsoring an activity, government paving the way, government quote-unquote regulating the casino activities essentially for its own benefit.
Okay, we have a question up here, this gentleman.
Can you rebut that?
Yes. I'm going to address this question to the pros, and I'm just wondering whether we're too late to the table. It's my understanding that the gambling casinos in Pennsylvania have proliferated to the degree that they're cutting each other's throats. If you go down to Atlantic City, that certainly could not be considered a gardened area. When you step out of the casino, you're back in a slum. That hasn't created some economic benefit or drive. Furthermore, I believe you mentioned the Mohegan Sun, and most of these have mortgaged themselves right out of the ability to pay for their mortgages.
One dead.
I'll let you go.
One did, and that was Foxwoods, and they made some very poor business modeling decisions, and right now they're actually in very decent shape. Now, to say that, to compare us to Mississippi, you're comparing New York to Mississippi? Honestly, is that what we're doing here? Also, in terms of the types of casinos that are in Mississippi, they are warehouses with names on them and that sort of thing. We're talking about resorts here.
Mark,
I'll give you
the Beau Rivage Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi, which I visited a month ago, is one of the fanciest gaming destinations in America, but not most.
The EPT Concord Resort is expected to create 2,600 full-time jobs. They're going to spend $600 million on this resort. So the gentleman mentioned that it's going to be a beautiful place. Of course it is. And when you step out of the Concord Resort, you're going to look at the Catskill Mountains in its most bucolic setting that you can possibly look at. What better place to be, in my opinion? If the casino portion of these projects is the catalyst to bring some of the other development that we need in our area, that is a good thing. And we think that those other avenues and those other projects that are going to come as a resort is something that's going to be a positive benefit in Sullivan County. So I just disagree with that entirely. And I think we know from a tourism perspective what it's going to do for us, and that's why we support it.
There's a hand up here.
We had a question here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. People have always been gambling, and they always will be. And along a related line, about 100 years ago, a group of moralistic people decided that we shouldn't drink anymore and we should give it up. And that was tried, and it didn't succeed. So people are always going to have their vices, and unfortunately, and trying to stop them is not going to do it. And might as well get some free enterprise to construct businesses. And because otherwise, nobody's going to be going to the Catskills, for example, except people like the nature, which is great, but it's a limited market.
And you're directing that to
anybody.
I assume. Freedom to gamble is not, look, the freedom to gamble is not the issue. You're free to gamble right now, all day, every day, if you want to. You can play poker, bet on the Super Bowl. You can do all the gambling you want. And what you can't do, according to our Bill of Rights, is come in and set up a commercial operation with rigged games of chance where the only thing that happens is that people lose their money. That's what you can't do in New York State, and we've never been able to do it. Our Constitution outlaws it because it's a cheating mechanism. It cheats people, and it gets people involved in a situation where they hurt themselves. That's the one thing that this commercial activity backed by the state in order to get revenue for the state. So even if you don't go, even if you don't go to the casinos, the governor is asking you to become complicit in this. He's saying that in the name of citizenship, we want you to set up fleecing operations so that we can take advantage of people so that we get money for the state. But recreationally, you can play, you can gamble all you want. Go home and do it tonight if you want. But let's not do this ugly thing in the name of our government.
I think Steve, in his opening comments, I wrote this down because I thought it was an interesting thing to say. It was that the goal should be the eradication of gambling. No, maybe it's
eradication of problem gambling.
Oh, okay.
Not of gambling
the real,
in general.
The real practical change in this constitutional amendment is that in these commercial operations that already exist in New York State, we're going to have table gaming. We have what are functionally slot machines in both the private and the Native American gaming houses today. They're here. We do it. So this is not, I mean, this idea that it's state-sponsored, it's state-promoted.
It's do is turn the casinos into full board. That's not right.
Let me finish. The types of games that'll be,
yes, it is.
That'll be allowed under this are basically the card games in casinos. You have what are effect slot machines today. That's the difference. That's the difference. That, to me, is not government sponsoring, government coercion, government endorsing of fleecing. It's a relatively modest change in what type of gaming is allowed in New York State.
And I could speak to that because this our particular project, the EPR project, is going to take 1,700 video lottery terminals, for all intents and purposes, slot machines, and move them from a location to the Concord site and add the card games. So in effect, they're not adding to that number of slot machines whatsoever. And one other point I'd like to make. Does not government license alcohol? When government gives a license, it licenses bars, it licenses alcohol, it taxes alcohol. Would you say that government is a partner in selling alcohol, which is considered a vice to many people? Well, then we could look at every product in every situation and say, well, government taxes it and government endorses anything.
Mark,
so we viewed this as the same thing.
Are you finished with your
yes.
point you're making? Okay, so
the difference is, you've said this a couple of times now. You said, well, if every vice, no. You bring up the example of alcohol.
Sure.
Here would be the proper analogy. The governor gets up and gives a big speech and says, New York is going to go into the alcohol business. After all, we're already sort of in it. So what we're going to do is send around cars to all the homes of alcoholics and give them free transportation to the bars.
Not what
we're going to give them free chit so
it's
they can drink to their heart's content.
That's not
we're
going to
encourage people, and we're going to say this is good for the development of our society. And after all, it'll be jobs for bartenders.
Yeah,
so what we're going to do is drink to help send little Johnny to school and go into the, after all, we already have it. So let's set up a Drink for New York program. That would be the analogy. We don't do that for alcohol. We don't do it for drugs either. We don't put New York into the, we're going to go into the drug creation business and give people free starter drugs. We don't do that. We've had the compromise with gambling. We've said recreational and private gambling is okay. Gamble to your heart's content as long as it's private and recreational. When it's commercial, done in the name of the state, that's where we draw the line.
Well, it's not done in the name of the state.
It's not done in the name of the state, and it's not being promoted by the
why?
State.
Why?
This is a change.
Why are we changing our Constitution? Why is the governor involved?
I'm going to interject something here.
Because it's a matter of law. The only way for it is, this is what legislators do. They modify laws to reflect modern circumstances. This was put in our Constitution 160 years ago. It's what they do.
Well, tell me for a minute. Let me stop for a minute here. Now, what is, from your perspective, what is wrong with that analogy?
It's just, we have gaming. There's one thing, basically, we do not allow in New York State. That's table games in non-Indian casinos. And this change in the Constitution will allow that.
And from my perspective,
it is not. I mean, yeah. This is not public money being spent on casinos.
Correct.
This is not government building casinos.
Correct.
This is not government advertising casinos. And by the way, this legal fight over the language on the ballot is taken. The issues in that language is taken directly out of the statement of legislative intent adopted in the bill that passed overwhelmingly in both houses of the legislature and is modeled on past ballot referendums. Look at past ballot referendums for things like Bond Act. They say this is the purpose of this referendum.
To create jobs and help the economy.
Correct.
Did you know also that casino gambling reduces heart disease and brings on world peace? Because that would be another thing you could add into that line.
Right, are there
heart disease?
We're gonna
no
move
heart
on.
Disease.
We're going to move on to see if there is another question.
Happiness.
Please.
I just got to say this because I this was hard to get. I got this is the question two on the 2005 November ballot in New York State. Question two: rebuild and renew New York State Transportation Bond Act of 2005. A proposition to promote and assure the preservation, renewal, and improvement of the state's roads and bridges and other vital transportation systems, shall we borrow $2.9 billion? That is the way ballot referendums are presented to the people. They explain what the purpose of the constitutional change is.
It also makes your flowers bloom more obviously.
No, but see, it gets
so when,
all right, we're going to get,
so when you don't,
we're going to get this gentleman up here now.
Let's point out, the man who asked for facts when presented with a fact,
this is what we get.
Right. You could claim that it does anything. You could claim that it does anything.
Go ahead, sir. Get your question.
So I actually want to keep kind of take a little tangent off of this little conversation with an example that the defending side used, which was smoking. So one piece is that if we want to take the argument that it doesn't create any goods, we'll look at an amusement park, right? Amusement parks create an experience, and that creates value within itself. So, okay, we allow amusement parks. Great. So now we have these casinos, and with smoking, it's not that we are creating with smoking we allow it and we tax the heck out of it, right? Because we're changing the substitution effect for the value of that virtue from one good to another. And so what you're saying is, oh, just because we shouldn't do it, you know, just because we allow it means we shouldn't, you know, that with that argument of line with that that argument of thought, we allow smoking. It's not like we've banned smoking everywhere within the state. We've just extremely taxed it. And so that's right. The point here is, so we're just, so if you want to do that, let's allow it. Let's tack the bejesus out of it. So that way it becomes so incredibly expensive relative to other goods that now people don't want to do it. That's the substitution effect and what we were trying to get at.
The problem with that argument is that the state is in a conflict of interest. Because if the state tries to minimize something, that undercuts the whole reason it got into it in the first place. The state's looking for the money. So my friend said, oh, you could have bet limits like they do in Missouri. The reason that most states don't do anything like that is because if you place bet limits, it reduces the income that goes to the state. The state's in a conflict of interest. On the one hand, it's a public health regulator, and on the other hand, it wants the money. What are we going to do? Promote the public health or get the money? Get the money or promote the public health? Classic conflict of interest, which the government should not be in the position of doing that.
You're missing his point.
The same situation happens in cigarettes. And we don't disallow cigarettes. The same situation happens with alcohol. We don't disallow alcohol. So what you're saying is we can only do it for the casinos because Armageddon's going to take place, but we won't do it for alcohol and everything else. We can let that go. That's okay. Everybody can smoke and everybody can drink and everybody can do everything else they want to do. It's a product. The state's going to tax that product enormously because they are going to get revenue out of it. And that's what they do. That's how they get their revenue. Gas, cigarettes, pizza, cars, whatever they do. And that's just fine by me. And if they want to tax it at a certain rate, let's say the rate's 37% of all slots that are going to be taxed in New York. If those are the rules of engagement coming in, then it's up to the private sector, the marketplace, the commercial entity to decide in its business plan whether that number works for them or not. And if it works, so be it.
You
let
really want
that?
You really want lots time. More we've New Yorkers got, to smoke cigarettes for, so
for
that they can...
More, we've just got time for one more question. And this one here is going to ask it, and I would ask you all to be brief because we also have to have our closing remarks, so we're bumping up against this. So quick question, quick answer, and we'll go to closing remarks.
Okay. It seems that I hear two things out of the pro side. Like in response to the white elephant question, it's, oh, that's not going to happen here. This is going to really work. We're going to bring in all this money. But then it's, oh, it's no big deal. We're just adding one thing. And that seems to be a logical disconnect to me. So our Constitution is an important thing. I think it's very important. It was constructed for a certain reason. And we've made an exception now for lottery. We've made an exception for off-track betting, for these games that are played in bars. Can't remember the name right now. Every 5 minutes. You know, we keep saying...
Quick draw.
Quick draw. That's it. And then it's racinos, and it just keeps getting bigger. Every time it's, we just need this one more thing. We just need this
so
one more thing.
Is,
so the question is, why should we believe it now? It seems like it's been so many times, and it always needs more. It never stops.
I think that's directed to the affirmative and a quick response, and then we'll move to closing arguments.
It's unclear to me what it is that you want to believe. And the...
That it's going to be a word.
Well, and this is, gets back to my point. This is a thing, not the thing, for upstate New York. This is an opportunity. It is not the opportunity. This is private dollars invested and at risk. And just like a lot of projects that are privately invested, some work, some don't. I don't know why that is. The idea that if someone builds something, it may not be successful is the reason not to build things. But to me, that's not really the point here. To us, the point is that, again, by a quirk of an old law, certain things are allowed and certain things aren't. We're saying we're eliminating that quirk, and if people are ready, willing, and able to invest private dollars in these facilities, that they can.
Yeah, we'll move on to closing statements now. We'll start with the affirmative. You have 2 minutes for your closing statement. And then the negative will have the last word.
So. I want to thank you for having us here. Obviously, I was a little impassioned about my comments and about this particular vote because of the effects that I think it's going to have on my community, Sullivan County, which has been devastated by job loss for many, many years. We know from a whole host of different studies, the Pinnacle Group and others that have done market studies in our area that have determined that these numbers are accurate in our area, and that's why we have that interest in Sullivan County. We wouldn't have the interest of the corporate entities that wanted to come here if they didn't think they were going to be successful in that particular area. So that answers that question. And to me, again, I'm a product of that industry. I'm a product of tourism. My parents came here with no education, sixth grade education, and worked in these hotels and these tourists. And I tell you, they're proud as heck to have me stand here in this university and speak to you people. And they raised six kids, and they, in their wildest dreams, wouldn't think that I'd be the president of an economic development corporation and that I'm here addressing this on their behalf and on the rest of the people in Sullivan County. And to that end, I think tourism works. I think the casino issue is going to work. And for me, I'm going to vote yes for Prop 1 on November 5th.
Thank you.
There isn't a single independent study that shows that casinos contribute to economic growth. Of course, the interested actors will tell you that they believe it's going to be a miracle cure and it's going to create a lot of jobs, but there is no study of an independent nature that shows this. If there was such a study, we would have learned about it. There is no rebuttal to the fact that 35 to 55% of the money in casinos comes from people with serious problems, and is it ethical to take our money to pay for our government from this group of people? If there were a rebuttal to the 35 to 55% number, we would have heard it. There is no rebuttal. This is a standing fact. Out there on the wall, it says, you look at it on your way out, it says, it's one of the oldest political oaths. its oath to the Athenian city-state, and it says that you pledge to leave the city more beautiful than you found it. It's lovely. You pledge to leave the city more beautiful than you found it. Does anybody really think this is beautiful, what we're talking about tonight? Creating these swirling things with the machines that just take your money and cause a lot of problems in people's lives so that the government get the money. Does anybody think it's beautiful?
Okay, I want to thank the panelists for, I think, a very substantive and highly spirited debate.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm not done yet, guys, but I'm glad you're shaking hands.
The only thing that people have to do is walk out the right.
Well, I got a few things to say about that. It's more complicated than you might think. What I wanted to ask the audience, and I also want to thank you folks for asking great questions and making great comments. So first of all, before I say my final couple of pieces, I think we should give them and ourselves a round of applause.
Thanks again for listening to this debate. Hopefully you've heard something here that will inform your decision-making on November 5th. And for other conversations about public policy questions facing the region, state, and nation, I'd invite you to check out the Campbell Conversations page on this website. For WRVO, I'm Grant Reher.